From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, October 1st, 2025. Maine Family Planning will end its primary care services by the end of the month, affecting 800 patients in Aroostook and Hancock counties. The nonprofit says it made the difficult decision because of a federal law that bans health providers that also provide abortions from getting Medicaid reimbursements. Maine Family Planning is challenging the law in federal court, but has not been able to secure a preliminary injunction to restore funding. Spokesperson Olivia Pennington says, even though the law is only for 1 year, it's a $2 million loss for the organization.
And we have been very clear that even within a few months, catastrophic damage can happen in terms of what people are able to access for healthcare.
Maine Family Planning's primary care clinics are located in Ellsworth, Holton, and Presque Isle. Pennington says they'll work to connect patients there with other providers. Meanwhile, federal funding has been restored for a University of Southern Maine program that supports veterans in their pursuit of higher education, according to Senator Susan Collins. The two-year, $600,000 grant for the USM Upward Bound program was pulled in mid-September. Maine's congressional delegation sent a letter to Education Secretary Linda McMahon requesting the funding be reinstated. Funding for another canceled Upward Bound program at the University of Maine at Farmington has yet to be restored. Maine law enforcement officials are investigating reports that a woman in rural Penobscot County allegedly received a box in the mail containing hundreds of state ballots. Kevin Miller reports.
According to a story by the conservative news outlet, The Maine Wire, an unnamed woman in Newburgh discovered 250 ballot sheets for the upcoming statewide referendum in a box from Amazon containing items she had ordered. A spokeswoman for Secretary of State Shenna Bellows said Wednesday that the office was aware of the, quote, serious allegations, and that law enforcement were investigating. The office did not reply to subsequent requests for more information about who is leading the investigation, however, or make Bellows available for an interview. But conservatives quickly seized on the alleged incident. The chairman of the Maine Republican Party, Jim Diarmond, called on the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate. And Alex Titcomb, who is leading the voter ID referendum on this November's ballot, also called on the DOJ to get involved and said Bellows should resign. Titcomb called the incident a, quote, appalling breakdown in the chain of custody that could undermine voter confidence in elections. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The National Park Service announced today that parks will remain as accessible as possible during the government shutdown, but that some services may be unavailable. As Caitlin Bedion reports, it's not yet clear what that means for visitors.
Earlier this week, former National Park superintendents urged the agency to fully close parks during the shutdown, citing safety and maintenance concerns. But the Trump administration has ordered parks to remain at least partially open. Brian Hinrichs is the executive director of Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters. He says that while roads and trails there will remain open, the contact station will be closed and there will be minimum maintenance done to restrooms and other areas.
So I would just urge folks to really carefully consider any of their plans and to keep their own safety and to keep the protection of these natural landscapes and natural resources at the forefront of their planning.
It's not clear what services will be affected at Acadia National Park. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedion.
According to the Mills administration, the number of Maine households that relied on heating oil last year was the lowest in decades. The state's energy office credits the decline to the rapid adoption of electric heat pumps. Peter McGuire has more.
Maine is still the most heating oil-reliant state in the country. But the number of homes burning oil has fallen from 70% 14 years ago to just over 50%. Dan Burgess with the Maine Department of Energy Resources says getting residents off costly imported fuel has been a long-term goal.
The diversification away from home heating oil is certainly a positive trend, and one that I think policymakers and those in the energy space have been encouraging for decades.
Generous rebates in the last few years encouraged Mainers to install more than 100,000 heat pump units. But some oil customers also switched to other fossil fuels, such as gas and propane, according to federal data. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
A Glen Burn woman was sentenced yesterday in U.S. District Court in Portland to 5 years in prison for embezzlement and was ordered to pay back roughly $1 million. According to the U.S. District Attorney's Office, Kelly Ballinger was the property manager at a Portland apartment complex with units funded by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. From roughly 2015 to 2021, prosecutors say she stole rent payments made by tenants in the department's voucher program. Ballinger told tenants to pay their rent with a blank postal money order and then would place her name or her employee's name as the payee, adding descriptions to suggest the payments were reimbursements. In some cases, she would deflate a tenant's income to $0 so the department would pay a larger share of the rent. Judge John Woodcock described Ballinger's activities as, quote, calculated, deliberate, and devious. Ballinger pleaded guilty to the charges last year. Faculty at Thomas College in Waterville voted yesterday to join the Maine Education Association, making it the first private college in Maine to unionize. Jono Anzalone is an assistant professor of economics at the college and was on the union organizing committee. He says faculty became concerned last year when newly installed president Janine Uzi began making changes without consulting the faculty senate.
The faculty rightfully are concerned that these changes are being made very quickly, not in consultation and partnership. And we were very concerned that these were going to have adverse impacts on students.
In a statement, a spokesperson for Thomas College says administrators respect the decision to pursue collective bargaining and look forward to working collaboratively. For disclosure, most of Maine Public's news staff is represented by the Maine Education Association. Northern Light Health and Anthem have agreed to extend their current contract for another 30 days. In a joint press release, the two organizations say this will give them time to continue working toward a long-term agreement that prioritizes affordability, patient access, and quality care. The announcement means that all Northern Light providers will remain in network with Anthem for at least another month. Governor Janet Mills issued a statement saying that she met with both parties today to push for the extension. Mills says a potential contract termination would be devastating for patients, and she's urging the organizations to resolve their months-long stalemate. As housing costs have skyrocketed over the past 5 years, homelessness has become a much more visible challenge for some communities in Maine. People are staying unhoused for longer, and programs that are meant to help people navigate the rental market and secure permanent housing are facing more obstacles and taking longer. Nicole Ogrisco spoke with one woman in Lewiston who lived outside for 4 years but eventually found an apartment through a program called Rapid Rehousing.
It's a warm summer day in Lewiston, and the AC is on full blast in the community room of Cindy Neff's apartment building downtown. Neff, who is 57, says having a place to stay to escape from the heat is a relief after spending 4 years living outside.
I was getting tired, worn down, as you can tell, and it was taking a toll on me. It really was taking a toll on my body, physically and mentally.
Neff was evicted from her apartment almost 5 years ago. She had outstanding rent payments. She spent most of her days at the Auburn Library.
They were in my home for 4 years. Yep. I walk in there every morning, they say, morning, Cindy, good morning. Oh, yeah, they get to know me.
2 years ago, while walking across the street, Neff was hit by a truck and severely injured. She says she was hospitalized in an induced coma and spent about a month in intensive care. Despite her condition, Neff says she found some comfort in the hospital.
I was off the street. I had something to eat. I didn't have to worry about, you know what I mean? I could wash up if I wanted to.
Neff says she had to relearn how to walk, how to sit up, how to feed herself. And she says it was scary to think about leaving the hospital.
Then when I knew I had to be released from the hospital, I was scared because it's like, here I had been like in a bubble for quite some time, and now I had to be back out on the streets because I'm getting better and doing all that.
After leaving the hospital, Neff says she found a sober living home to continue her recovery, but she says it wasn't a good fit, and she went back to living outside. Last year, Neff was connected with the nonprofit service provider Preble Street, which suggested a rapid rehousing program. It offers housing navigation services and financial support with the goal of finding permanent housing quickly, ideally within 2 or 3 months.
Our biggest thing with our program is we just require clients to engage. That sounds so minimal, and it's not.
Caseworker Kai Gardnell says it was clear that Neff was engaged and desperately wanted a place of her own. The first step was helping Neff apply for new copies of her birth certificate, Social Security card, and state ID, which had all been lost or stolen multiple times while Neff had been unhoused. Then Cardinal and Neff began looking for apartments that she could afford on a supplemental security income of less than $1,000 a month. At one point, Neff qualified for an apartment but needed a doctor's note to confirm a disability. The form wasn't properly filled out, and Neff lost the apartment. Cardinal says these situations happen all the time.
They just, at the very least, people get swept under the rug in these systems or forgotten about. And I think it's easy for folks to just write them off.
Eventually, a new apartment building in Lewiston opened with a unit that Neff could afford. So she applied, was accepted, and moved in this past February. She says living inside with her own bed and shower has taken some getting used to.
There's a lot of things I forgot about when it came to an apartment. I learned how to do a lot of things over again.
Under the program, Cardinal will work with Neff for at least a year to make sure she's comfortable paying her rent and tackle other life goals. She says improving her health is the biggest priority and is applying for a full-time medical caseworker. But she also has another goal in mind, a vacation, ideally somewhere warm.
Any place in particular you'd really like to go?
Yeah, Miami.
Miami?
Miami.
Okay.
And for more insight on this story, Nicole Ogrisco joins me now. Hey, Nicole.
Hey, Ari.
So we just heard Cindy Neff's story, who, as you reported, eventually did find an apartment through a rapid rehousing program. So does rapid rehousing live up to its name?
So the programs vary. Some shelters offer rapid rehousing services that really amount to housing navigation, essentially helping folks look for an apartment and guide them through the complex world of housing vouchers, subsidized units, et cetera. Other programs, like the one that Cindy used through Preble Street, offer financial assistance, too. So in Cindy's case, the program helped her pay for a new state ID and birth certificate. The programs can also pay for a security deposit to land an apartment or help someone buy furniture once they have a place to live. Some participants have received financial assistance to help pay for courses or training that they need for employment. Unfortunately, in recent years, the rapid part of rapid rehousing has become a bit of a misnomer. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the gold standard for finding permanent housing for someone enrolled in a rapid rehousing program is 2 to 3 months, but it's taking much longer. It took Cindy about 4 months to get into an apartment, and across the state, officials with Maine Housing say on average it took anywhere from 4 to 6 months for clients to find permanent housing through a rapid rehousing program. The lease time has fluctuated slightly over the last 5 years, but overall has trended upward. And providers that I spoke to said they believe that without these services, it would actually take longer for someone to find permanent housing because navigating the rental market is so complicated these days.
Yeah, could you say more about that?
So it's a confluence of different things. First, there's a limited supply of housing, particularly income-restricted housing, that's subsidized in some way or that allows for vouchers. Then there's the lack of vouchers themselves. The vouchers, which are paid for by the federal government and then managed by local housing authorities around the state, are not going as far as they used to as rents have gone up. And as a result, some housing authorities have gone over budget in issuing vouchers, and some local authorities were forced to temporarily stop issuing the vouchers altogether. And then even if you have a voucher, there might not be a landlord willing to take it.
And then, of course, what about the cost of rent, which is affecting everybody?
So providers say that's the biggest reason, is people simply can't afford the housing that is available. You know, the goal of this program is for people to successfully stay housed and not have them return to homelessness later on. Providers that I spoke to said oftentimes their caseworkers will find a market rate apartment for their client, but the rent is just too high, sometimes half or more of a person's income. And that's really not a realistic option for the client to keep paying in a year or two. So they'll wait in the hope that a subsidized apartment that they can afford might eventually become available. And then finally, there's bureaucratic obstacles. And these are not necessarily new, but when you're working in such a tight rental market and competing with others for, say, the one available apartment that's affordable, there's just no room for mistakes or missed documents. In Cindy Neff's case, she initially found an apartment that she qualified for, but she needed a doctor to fill out some paperwork in just the right way. And when it wasn't, she lost the apartment and then went back to square one.
That's reporter Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks, Nicole.
Thanks, Sari.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 tomorrow morning, the legacy of Maine statesman James Blaine. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.